Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
Well, welcome back to Coast, George Dory with you. We have been following, of course, the tragedy in Ethiopia where 157 people died several days ago in that very tragic crash of the Boeing company's 737 MAX 8. And, of course, what's really got everybody concerned, of course, is because in October there was an identical plane that crashed in the Java Sea, killing 189 people. And the crashes seemed similar. I thought it's about time we bring back David Soucy back to the program. David, of course, is the author of Why Planes Crash. He was born in Boulder, Colorado, and he has traveled the world in the interest of improving safety awareness. He worked in the cockpit on the hangar floor within aviation boardrooms and inside the Washington, D.C. Beltway. He has seen death up close and personal, David, and you've been on CNN all week, David. Good to have you back.
Well, thank you, George. I wish it was for something more enlightening, but this is a true tragedy.
When I saw the similarities between the two crashes, this is even before anybody had grounded these planes, I figured this is something weird. I've been someone, David, I don't believe in coincidences.
I think
things happen, and when they do, you got to look at the facts that are out there. They're way too similar. What do you think?
Oh, most definitely, George. As an accident investigator, which I was for 16 years, the worst fear that I have is basically going to the same accident scene twice. You know, you go to one accident scene, you figure out what happened to it, and you put fixes in place to make sure it doesn't happen again. But then when it does, It's doubly as tragic. It's just horrible. And when I saw these two, the data where the angle of attack indicator, now this data was streamed through the new system that we use, the ADS-B system. And so when I got the what they call the high-definition report, which was within hours of the accident, I could see clearly that this angle of attack indicator was giving so similar readings to Lion Air that it was frightening. I knew we had to do something right away.
When you put this mix, let's just assume for a moment that there's a software problem, and Boeing is trying to update it as we speak, but there's a software problem, and mix that in with inexperienced pilots that don't have a lot of flying time, you got a disaster on your hands.
Yeah, George, that's the case in Lion Air, but then again, in this aircraft, in the Ethiopian aircraft, they had 8,000 hours. So, you know, in the accidents that I've investigated, there's a thing that I refer to as the atrophy of vigilance in the brain. And what happens is the more confident you are and the more routine you are as to how you do things, your brain is not capable of understanding or becomes less capable of understanding anomalies and when things don't go the way you expect them to go. And so even in that case, even in someone who has that much experience, they're going to respond in the way that they, you know, innately do. And the way that this software is, it set them up for failure from the very beginning to for that kind of scenario to happen.
In January of 2009, a U.S. Airbus A320 tanked in the Hudson River. All 155 people aboard survived because of the incredible work of now retired Captain Sully Sullenberger. He went online today, David, and said that we don't know the cause yet of the crash, but I'm concerned about the training of the pilots. What do you think?
Well, the training of the pilots, I think it goes further than that, though. If the pilots had the information, they did have extensive training. What was, I think, the mistake, as is the case with almost every accident I've done, the actual risk occurs way before the accident occurs. And I believe that the risk here started with the desire of Boeing and the FAA to come up with a new aircraft that had new capabilities, that had bigger engines, that had a very significantly different airplane. But what they wanted to do was make sure that the pilots that went from the old model 737 into the new model 737 didn't require a lot more training. They wanted to be able to save a lot of money, and they wanted to be able to make it more efficient transition to this new model airplane by saying, well, the cockpits are the same, and you fly it the same way, and it feels the same way, and we don't have to retrain you on a whole new type of aircraft. And that's what they certified it under, the same type certificate, which is the basically the approval to build that airplane. So they started by saying, we want to make the same type certificate, but we're going to pack a lot more punch into this new 737. So I believe that's where it really started. And when they came up with a system to make it fly that same way, so that they didn't have to retrain pilots and go through this, they didn't tell the pilots that there was something new about this airplane. And so the pilot training, as good as it may have been, didn't touch on this particular part of the aircraft, which is the MCAS, is what it's referred to as. That's the Maneuvering Characteristics Augmentation System, a big name for a simple thing. It just makes sure the airplane flies straight, really.
We've got some video, a simulation of the Ethiopian crash on the coasttocoastam.com website in the highlight reel, but I want to warn everybody, it is kind of emotional towards the end. It's video simulation. It is not actually what happened during the crash. It is just a simulation on what the artists think happened, but it is still kind of emotional. David, in your opinion, based on what you're hearing of the two crashes, what do you think happened in this Ethiopian crash in terms of it takes off, people are strapped in, the plane takes off, what happens?
Well, at this point, it's interesting. I looked at the data from the same flight from the same airport at the day before. The day before, let's start with that flight first. They're strapped in and they go to fly, and three-quarters of the way down the runway, they take off, and they're 1,000 feet above the runway, going about 240 knots. In this next day, they take off, and the airplane stays on the ground for an extended period of time. It goes past that point, three-quarters of the way down the airport. The speed continues to increase and increase and increase and ends up to about 260, 270 knots on the ground before it even takes off. And the pilots had to be wondering why this thing's not lifting off at that point. But eventually they do get the aircraft to lift off. They lift off with that aircraft and it takes off. Within 6 minutes, within 5.5 to 6 minutes, this flight, well, the firstly within 3 minutes, the pilot starts calling back saying, we need to come home, we need to come home, there's something wrong. We need to bring back home. Give me a vector. I need to be back. We need to go back and land. So they routed other airplanes around. They tried to turn the airplane around, or they were going to. But before they even had a chance to turn this airplane around, it had already gone down, and the nose of the aircraft was pushed down by this MCAS system. And tragically, the aircraft continued down, and within 5 or 6 minutes, the aircraft had crashed and no survivors.
At what angle was the plane coming down?
I don't know all the details at this point. I do know that that it was an incredibly short period of time. So if I can just calculate what the angle would be, it would have been close to about 75 degrees.
Oh, my God. That's almost straight down.
Mm-hmm, it is.
So the people obviously aboard this plane, they knew this was it.
Yes, they did. They did. This was not one of those instantaneous failures that happen in the sky when people are instantaneously killed. This is something that they had to have suffered that all the way down, knowing that something obviously traumatic was going on. But before that, the aircraft had pulsed up and down. It was going up and down. The air traffic controllers knew there was problems with this aircraft long before, not long before, but minutes before the pilot actually called in for help, because they could see that it was varying altitude significantly, up to 100 feet up and 100 feet down. Very rapidly.
David, I fly about 4 to 6 times a month, primarily with Southwest, and I'm on these older versions of the 737s, the old reliable ones. But every time we hit a little turbulence, you know, you could tell people on the plane get a little skittish and jittery. They make some sounds and things like that. I could only imagine what it was like on that plane for those poor people.
It had to be tragic. It would have panicked anyone. Unfortunately, you're there and you have nothing you can do about it.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern, and go to coasttocoastam.com for more.